Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
Back on FST on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. Whether it's TuneIn Radio or iHeartRadio, or the Fantasy Sports Radio app, or a variety of terrestrial radio stations across the country, thank you. We appreciate that. So, we talked a little NFL. We talked some baseball. Has there ever been a quicker turnaround from, hey, you're coach of the year, to you're fired, than Dwayne Casey just experienced?
George Karl's the only one, right?
He's announced as coach of the year on May 9th, and he was fired officially yesterday, which was May 11th. So I don't even know, was he even presented the award before he was fired? I mean, they got swept on the 7th, and he was announced on the 9th after they were swept and fired, or I guess he was announced on the 8th and then fired yesterday. So that was a hell of a week. I was on Gabe and I was on what's the name of the show? I was on with Gabe and Red Heat and Rage. I was on with those guys on Monday, and they're Torontonians, Canadians. I think it's Toronto. They are Canadian, yes. And they were talking. I did a quick spot on their show, and we were talking about and previewing the games that night. We, of course, thought that the Celts would cover, which they didn't. It was the Sixers' one win of the series that they covered, and they covered it. And then they thought that Toronto might have a shot to win that game 4, and I thought those guys were done. I thought they were ready to play golf, and it proved to be the case because they were done. And we talked about Dwayne Casey at that moment. And I said, even if they won and they were out in 5, you're going to have to make a change, because in game 3 of that series, and a game in which they actually competitively fought back and then inexplicably left a big shot to Fred VanVleet for the second time in the series, DeMar DeRozan was on the bench that entire fourth quarter of that comeback. You almost couldn't blame him at the time because the team was fighting back, but it created a dynamic where your star player that you pay $30 million a year can't even be in the game in the fourth quarter, and the coach is too tied to that. I think they were going to need to break free from that and try to start anew, build up where all of their confidence, DeRozan's confidence, Lowry's confidence, whatever it is, mental block during the playoffs, especially when they play the Cavs.
So it's funny, the actual Coach of the Year award that he got was the one voted on by his peers, so it'll be interesting to see if he actually gets then on the if he is unemployed at the NBA awards ceremony that they do, which happens in like the end of June or whatever it may be, if he's like on the podium accepting the Coach of the Year award while not having a coaching job. In terms of the decision, listen, benching DeRozan made sense. Like, they were finally looking good, and we know the mental block that exists, I would say, with DeRozan and with Lowry and pretty much with these Raptors and LeBron. Here's the thing, though, right? Losing to LeBron is fine, especially when, you know, you're in the Eastern Conference. He's been doing this forever now. It's how you lose, and it's accompanied with the expectations. So 2 years back, they played maybe the least competitive six-game series of all time. It was 2-2. They split. They didn't split, rather. Like, each team won their home games, and LeBron was like, basically saying, I will end this when I please. Like, they asked him about adversity. He's like, I've been in adversity. This is not that. And then he quickly wrapped up games 5 and 6. Then last year, they were swept in an uncompetitive way. And then this year... a pair of competitive games. The game one was heartbreaking to lose. Then they got blown off their own court in game two with LeBron hitting all of those fadeaways and pretty much just dancing on their grave. They go to game three. He hits one of the most disrespectful game winners I've ever seen someone hit. And then they completely run him off the court in game four. Now, I don't think that Dwayne Casey's a bad coach, but I look at this roster and I don't think blowing it up is a solution. They won 59 games. DeMar and Kyle are still within their prime, and they have pieces to be excited about. Like, Poeltl's getting better. Siakam is getting better. I think OG Anunoby looks to be like a pick that they absolutely got right. Fred VanVleet looks good. And Masi Uri has done really well as the GM, so who knows? He could even end up making this roster even better. What they needed to do was make a change, because there's no denying it. There is a mental block that exists within this core when they see LeBron James. Now, LeBron may end up being not only on a new team, but out of the conference after this year. But you need to make a change, because being swept back-to-back years by LeBron is just unacceptable. And I think it's a lot easier to switch the coach and just hope that something like that can be a breath of fresh air. A guy who hasn't been tormented by LeBron in that situation before, right? And just be able to perhaps push the right buttons, not be scared, and also, you know, say things that the guys can believe. Like, if Dwayne Casey in the huddle goes, "Don't worry, we got this," no one there believes it, because this whole core has done this get trounced by LeBron thing far too many times. But whether it be Mike Budenholzer or Jerry Stackhouse or whoever it is they give the job to says it, maybe there'll be a little more belief. Because, listen, this is why it always turns, right, to people now say the Eastern Conference is trash. It's not trash. LeBron just owns it. The Raptors were a better basketball team. They won 59 games. They were the third best team. They just ran up against the guy who completely owns them.
And he's locked in at the moment. You know, he's one of the greatest players of all time. And in my lifetime, there's only one. I would only argue one better. I don't want to forget about Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. But at this point, that's where I'm at. It's him and Jordan. In my lifetime. So I suppose I'll include Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, since I'm of the age where he would be considered my lifetime, but it's too difficult to compare the perimeter players and big men. So it's almost a different discussion. So there we go. I think they had to make the change. You and I are in lockstep with that. There was just no way that they were going to get around having him come back and try to convince them that they could beat LeBron or whomever it is in the playoffs, because it is almost to the point where they play with such little confidence. I don't think it would have mattered if they played Boston either. I don't think they would have, you know what I mean? I don't think they'd advance. I just think I'm not hammering them for their lack of mental toughness, although I'm sure people would, but there is something to it where, you know, when a team just doesn't know how to win, it doesn't get over the hump. It's the old Grady Miller thing from back in the day with the Red Sox. Like, Grady Miller did a good job with the 2003 Red Sox, but then he leaves Pedro in too long in a game 7 ALCS and they lose, and the team knew they weren't going to get over it. So Epstein moved on. They hired Terry Francona, and within the next year it was a different team, a different level of confidence, and they were able to overcome the Yankees in historic fashion. It's almost something like that here, where they just knew they weren't going to get past this. Right. This sweep in particular. The other years are embarrassing too, but this one in particular, when you're the one seed and you got swept and blown out in two of those games, and Fred VanVleet is taking big shots, and Jonas Valanciunas, people don't like the way his minutes are managed. So,
I mean, people that's it. I mean, have been talking about firing Casey for a while now, and they've done the right thing in keeping him there. And at the end of the day, I mean, I think it said in the last 23 series LeBron has played in the Eastern Conference, he's won all 23. I mean, he's made it to the NBA Finals. It's now 7 years straight. Like, this is what he does. There's no shame in losing to LeBron. It's how you lose. They were the one seed and got swept, and it wasn't competitive. And it's been 3 years straight of them.
The details matter.
Exactly.
The details matter. So I agree. So they will be going up against the first game of these conference finals are tomorrow. As we mentioned earlier in the show, Cleveland at Boston. That game's a 3:30 start. And Cleveland is a, what is this now? Yeah, it opened with Boston as a slight favorite. Now the money has moved over to LeBron. I said LeBron, but the Cavs, 1.5. So the Cavs are 1.5-point favorite. So who you got in game? Well, who do you have for the series? And let me, give me a little preview of the series. Who do you like?
So without coming off disrespectful, I have the Cavs in 4. There are a couple reasons here. The Cavs typically are a team, right? Like, they have to just go through the turmoil. They've gone through enough. Whether Kyrie requesting the trade that they got back for Kyrie not working out, overhauling the roster, the toxic meetings that they had between the player meetings. Like, they going 7 games in round 1. Like, they've gone through enough. And we've heard at the end of each series LeBron stress, or not really stress, but at least just admit how tired he is at the end of game 7. He's just like, I'm tired and I want to go home. And he tried to play the whole game and cramped up, and he couldn't. And then at the end of game 4, again, he looked like a little kid when the reporter asked him about now being able to get some rest because they got the Raptors done in 4. And he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to rest. And I think that LeBron knows, because he's been in this situation before heading into that Western Conference Finals, but he plays the Warriors or the Rockets. He's going to need all the rest possible, because you saw it at the end of that 2015 Finals. There just seemed to be no gas left in that tank when there was no Kyrie and no Kevin Love. So to me, the thing is, and I know people might find it crazy, but yeah, I do think that if the Cavs go out there and give it 100%, which they absolutely should be at this point, I think that they can finish this in 4. And partially because I don't think the Cavs can afford to let themselves go down early. So it's almost a situation where Boston having home court, I actually feel, does them harm. Because LeBron has no qualms about going to Boston and completely taking over TD Garden. And then I think that they'll be up 2-0 coming out of that, and then they can just close things out.
I'm not with you on this sweep, though. I think that Brad Stevens has a little bit of magic in him where he can coach. Look, I mean, we just got through saying it wasn't competitive against Toronto, but they actually did have a chance to win 2 of those games.
Sure.
I think Boston has the types of players that can put away a game or two. Notably, Al Horford isn't going to really be scared of the moment. Rozier has proven to be, and Marcus Smart, frankly, have proven. He did walk. By the way, let me just say, it was a foul.
Yeah.
Baines fouled Embiid.
Yeah.
I thought that in the moment. I had the texts to prove it. I am a huge fan of letting them play, but he got him on the arm. It was a foul. Whatever. Doesn't mean the series would have changed and we're done with it, but he did foul him. And Marcus Smart did walk. How much time would have been left? I don't know. But he did travel towards the end of the game after he stole the inbounds pass. But that being said, I do think they have players like that, Smart and Rozier and others that can make those plays, the hustle plays that can get you a win or two. So I'll pick the Cavs, but I actually think this one goes 6.
So
I can see Boston taking a couple of games. They're so good at home. They haven't lost at home yet this postseason. They're so good at home historically. I don't necessarily think they're going to win tomorrow, but I'll give them game 2 and you know, give them a chance to get back.
So here's the thing. This team was down 50 last year in Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. Brad is awesome in what he does. Undeniable top 3 coach in this league. I don't care. Because we saw this matchup last year, and you can say that this Celtics team is better than last year's Celtics team, and this year's Cavs team is worse than last year's Cavs team. That's fine. So what does that close the gap to? 30 in Boston? I know they were able to get a game in Cleveland. They were. But again, that comes with the Cavs consistently letting people into spots where they have no business letting them in if they've gone through enough of turmoil.
And we've talked about this with the Cavs in the past, and I think I talked about it on Red Heat and Rage. The other guys take games off.
But I don't think they can. Like, I don't think they will, because Kevin Love went through enough crap in round 1 and the start of the Raptor series to where Kevin Love has to play his best basketball. George Hill,
I agree,
is now healthy. Like, he was injured for the Indiana series, and we've seen how much of a difference that makes. Like, I'm fine if I don't think that everybody should think it's a sweep. I don't think that at all. And if we feel as if, right, the Cavs shooters go completely ice cold for a game, they lose. That makes 100% sense. My point is, though, there are too many, I think, mountains to climb. Like, Al Horford is getting a lot of respect for what he's done the first two series, and it's deserved. He's averaging the most points he's ever done in a playoffs, and his rebounds are up over two a game from last year. Here's the problem with Al Horford playing the Cavs. He has never once in his entire career been able to average 5 rebounds per game in a series against Cleveland. And that's why nobody respects him, because he goes out there against Tristan Thompson, and he goes out there against Kevin Love, and all of a sudden now, their best player isn't even better than Tristan Thompson. And that stuff all piles up. Like, Terry Rozier's been awesome, but this is now going to be another level. And they've got bodies that they're going to be able to try and throw at LeBron. Marcus Morris, Semi Ojeleye, Jaylen Brown. None of them are going to be able to do enough. And Brad Stevens is awesome at what he does. But let me pose a question.
Jaylen Brown not healthy either. It's maybe helping him getting a little bit of rest here. And they are obviously managing minutes. His injury appears to be the kind that they're just going to have to manage it through the remainder of this series. And if they advance beyond that, but keep in mind, Jaylen Brown's not particularly healthy either.
Well, yeah, but
you mentioned that's George Hill thing.
I mean, just they don't have, at the end of the day, there are like, what, 4 guys that you could throw at LeBron and be like, okay, we'll live with those results. Like, they don't have those. And the Cavs shooters right now are playing some of their best basketball. I mean, the Cavs are finding stuff that works for them. Like, the net rating of George Hill plus Kevin Love is phenomenal. You then add the trio of Hill, Love, and LeBron. It's been awesome. The two-man game that Love and Korver have been working is terrific. There's just a lot of ways right now for the Cavs to be able to beat Boston. And here's what it comes down to. The Cavs got their offense back against Toronto, and Boston does not have enough firepower.
I think the image of the playoffs so far that I have seared into my brain was OG Anunoby following LeBron down the court on that game 3 shot, and he was with him step for step, and LeBron just took an impossible. I mean, it's just that's really like poor. It was like, look, I can't say poor shot selection because he's trying to beat the buzzer, but it's such a low percentage shot that Anunoby didn't go up with him, and then it went in. And it's like, he had to be thinking, like, you have to be kidding me. I just ran step for step with this guy. And we'll talk about it when we come back. Yeah. And then we'll preview the Western Conference Finals as well. Warriors-Rockets, I think that is the series that people think is going to decide the championship. So we'll come back. Mike and Kevin, after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
That's what I'm talking about. A little Pearl Jam on a Saturday morning. Cold and rainy outside. It really does. Today feels like a tailgate day. I know it's springtime, but this song reminds me of a tailgate before games when I was a student at Boston College. I know it makes me sound like I'm 100, but I sort of am. So there's no denying how old I am. And then those albums were coming out while I was a student. So anyway, I've seen Pearl Jam in concert. Have you ever seen Pearl Jam in concert, Kevin Walsh? Not there. Come back to Kevin in a moment. So I'm going to preview the Golden State-Houston series coming up here in a second. Right now, we won't see a Golden State Houston game until Monday.
Mike, I'm back.
9:05 start. Okay, there you
missed
go.
Me.
So, Golden State Houston.
Wait, don't switch yet. I had to ask you something about Cleveland Boston.
Okay.
Because everyone is saying
you've really fouled up the front. I've asked you a question, you weren't there.
Listen, the headphones got messed up. There's a lot of stuff going on here. Better basketball IQ, Brad Stevens or LeBron James?
I wouldn't really pick anybody over LeBron James.
Okay.
He's not like the highest basketball IQ I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, that I agree. Well, it's just because
I know people joke about and like they make fun of Ty Lue in a disrespectful manner, but I honestly think like it's a really unique scenario. The player absolutely knows more about basketball than anybody that's going to try to coach him, with very, very few exceptions.
Did you hear?
I think that's why he has a ton of respect for Mike Krzyzewski in the USA basketball thing, because I think he realizes that, and Popovich, because he realizes they have similar basketball IQs to him. So he is deferential to them in a way, even though his IQ is probably still even higher than theirs. They're at least on the same level.
Did you hear the anecdote that David Griffin dropped on the Bill Simmons podcast this past week by chance?
I did not.
He was saying that they were playing the Raptors. I think it was either last year's series or 2 years back. And they came out of a timeout. They ran the play wrong. Toronto did. And LeBron told Patrick Patterson, he's like, hey, you're not supposed to be there. You're supposed to come set a pin down screen for DeMar and then pop out. As they were both walking them back to their huddles. And it's just one of the best things I've ever heard. Like, he knows the playbook of the other team better than the other team knows the playbook. And he is so confident. Like, that's one of the things about how he feels about playing the Raptors, that he's not even going to be like, oh, man, they don't know it. Great. He's going to be like, hey, look, like, you shouldn't do it that way. Because he doesn't care. It's like, you can run it right. Like, I'm going to still get there before you.
Yeah, I'm still going to defend you. I know where the ball is going, so you're not going to be able to shoot over me. That's great. No, that's a perfect example. It's a perfect example because I have tremendous respect for Brad Stevens, and I do think it's a joke that nobody voted for him. Not that I get – I've said before I don't really get animated in any way about awards or snubs or any of that kind of stuff. It's all sort of silly because there's only one thing that they really care about. The players will care about individual awards because you're getting a check, an incentive check to go along with it, and I think it adds to their lore. But at the end of the day, people are just trying to win championships. And like, do you think Dwayne Casey cares that he's coach of the year now? Like,
no.
That thing's going on a shelf, and it's going to be a reminder that he got fired. That's really what that award is, that he got fired the same day he got the award. That's what it's going to be about for him. So why I don't get too wrapped up in it. Plus, the voting ends up being ridiculous. He's obviously one of the top coaches, and they didn't vote for him. So, but I don't care. He's one of the top coaches.
One of the reasons I asked, though, right, is because a lot of people are just talking about Brad Stevens has all this time now to scheme up how he wants to attack LeBron, and like that does not matter.
It's not attacking LeBron.
I'm taking it out on you for what people think. Yes.
That's a ridiculous take because that isn't the way that they're going to get that done. He will find a way, potentially, to limit some touches, but it's difficult when the guy can also bring the ball up. You know, it isn't Embiid who you can figure out ways to deny him the ball or make sure that you're clogging the middle so that Simmons can't get uncontested shots in the paint. By the way, his shot chart was embarrassing. If you see it, there's no shots even beyond the elbow in that whole series. In the season, from a seasonal shot chart standpoint, it's bad enough. He didn't take any shots beyond the elbow in that series, Ben Simmons. And it as good a player as he is, he shot 54% this year, but nothing is outside of the paint. And he shoots 56% of the line. How is that possible that he's at this point in his career as father's professional basketball player? It boggles my mind that it's that bad. I know it's a tangential conversation, but it boggles my mind that it's that bad.
It's one of the things, honestly. We could talk about this because this is one of the things that I think people are.
He won't shoot. That's not. He can't, but he won't do it.
Right. Like, this is like.
It's like the John Lester to first base thing.
Mm-hmm.
He won't do it.
So, we talk a lot, right? Like, Ben Simmons, when he had the jump shot, will be unstoppable. Well, one, you're kind of discrediting how good he is right now. Like, the fact that Ben Simmons can do what he can without being willing to shoot is important. But this, it's like, if he shot at a Marcus Smart level or a Giannis Antetokounmpo level, then I would listen to that. He is a DeAndre Jordan level shooter. He actually shot, if I'm not mistaken, worse from the free throw line than DeAndre Jordan. Like, that's
shot 56% from
that's
the line.
What we're talking about with Ben Simmons. I love Ben Simmons. For anybody that follows me knows that I'm probably higher on Ben Simmons than almost anyone. But we're getting ahead of our. We always have to get ahead of ourselves. Like, this is always what happens, and this is why everything gets spoiled, because everyone goes too crazy with things and they think that people are going to overtake LeBron while LeBron is still the best player in the world. It's just like he needs to be able to shoot, period, like willing to shoot, and then we'll talk about what kind of shooter he can be. It is
great comparison, by the way. DeAndre Jordan shot 58% this season to Simmons 56%. So he is a worse.
He's a worse shooter than DeAndre
Jordan, who's known to be a historically bad free throw shooter.
Like,
so,
could you imagine doing hack a point guard? Like, that's not supposed to be something that's a thing.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's the Simmons thing. Good question about the LeBron stuff. That's not the way they're going to do it. They'll try to limit him. They'll try to expose other players so that they can, expose the Cavs defensively wherever they can. That's going to be the way to do it. It's not be like, we'll just limit LeBron from 30 points a game to 24 points a game, and it's not going to be that. I'm sure Stevens is going to have some tricks up his sleeve, but it's not going to be with the intent of stopping LeBron. That's just not really the way they would game plan. Ooh. They're just going to look for as many open shots as possible and continue to ride the Jason Tatum wave, who I thought was the best player in the draft, and I'm irritated to this day that the Celtics have Jason Tatum. Anyway, let's go. I really am. Like, I thought he was the best player, and they just fell to him. So
let me give you a Jason Tatum point quickly, though, because this is one of the things that I do think is actually kind of interesting that this series can dictate here, right? End of the regular season, the rankings for rookies were Simmons, Mitchell, Tatum, and I felt like they were mostly clear, right? Like, Simmons was, I think, for most people ahead of Mitchell. Mitchell had a pretty big gap between him and Tatum, and then Tatum had a massive gap between whoever you thought was fourth, right? But at this point now, especially if Tatum's able to put forth a good performance against the Cavs, even if they get swept, right? Like, let's just say he scores 20 in all the games and breaks that Kareem record of most consecutive 20-point games for a rookie in a playoffs. In the totality of the rookie year, when you incorporate playoffs, you might be able to make the argument that Tatum actually ended up with the best rookie season of the three.
Yeah, he's doing this on a big stage now, obviously. They're winning playoff series, and it's putting him in a spot where, yeah, he's going to get a lot of credit, especially after Kyrie goes down. He is the de facto face of the team right now. I mean, obviously, Al Horford, too, and it's been a unique kind of, I'm not going to call them misfits, but it's been a unique playoff rotation that is getting this done, right? With Rozier just on fire. But Tatum really, yeah, he's effectively the face of the team right now on the floor. And I think that's a fair argument to make, especially when Simmons had a bad series and Tatum
had to
advances in five games. Yeah, no doubt. And by the way, he shoots 83% from the free throw line. I would just like to note that. And his three-point percentage, he shot 43%. His overall field goal percentage just shy of 48%. He played in 80 games this year, too. That's notable for Tatum as a 19-year-old. He played in 80 games. He's pushing through the playoffs. Clearly, they had major injuries to that team, but he started 80 regular season games for them. That is pretty impressive that he's still getting it done here. No rookie wall, none of that stuff.
Yeah, no, I think he's terrific, and it's going to be. I really am interested to see how he performs. I mean, obviously, you can tell right by my outlook that I'm not anticipating this be the most competitive of series, but there are answers to certain questions that we can hope to get. Like if the Cavs are dominant enough, like, can we expect a competitive finals? Right, like, is Brad Stevens like the guru that everybody says? Like, people want to say he's the best coach in the NBA. Like, I'd at least like to see him get to the finals before we put him past Pop. Can I respect Al Horford enough to where he doesn't get sunned by Tristan Thompson? Like, those are things that we'll get from this series, even if it only goes four.
Yeah. I agree. I'm going to give him two games.
That's fine.
But I'm sort of leaning towards five. I'm Cavs in five, but I'll say Cavs in six. I just think the home court advantage has been pretty significant for the Celtics, obviously. So let's go to the other series. I want to talk about that because, you know, that is really the lead series here.
Sure.
We just, since the game is tomorrow with Cleveland-Boston, we talked about that one first. But Golden State-Houston right now. Houston, 1.5-point favorite on Monday. See, the money continues to move that towards the Warriors, but what is your thoughts? Give me a preview of your thoughts on this series in general.
So I'm not sure if you came across whatever, but on a podcast I did the other day, I kind of went on a tangent that there's something happening that I don't really understand why, where everybody is talking pretty dismissively of the Rockets, saying Warriors in four, Warriors in five, like really dismissively, and I'm just not entirely sure why. Like, this Rockets team is no two ways about it, the best team they have ever faced in this current run of the Warriors, and also it's probably the healthiest team that they've ever faced. Like, the Warriors' luck on injuries cannot be overstated. Like, I know that we knew they were going to be out going into the series, but the fact that they play the Spurs, who were without Kawhi, and the Pelicans, who were without Cousins, it's just, that's of course how it lines up. The Rockets won 65 games. That's the most that any team has won other than the 67-win Spurs from 2 years back, but they never played that Spurs team because the Thunder bounced them. So it's the best team record-wise that they're ever going to play. From, I mean, pretty much all of the analytics perspective, it's also the best team that they've ever played, and probably the team that you would make the second case for as far as the other best team and also healthiest team that they played was the series that they lost to Cleveland, where they blew the 3-1 lead. They're able to match them shooting. They have, for my money, a more talented backcourt. And I think that the Clint Capella-Draymond dynamic is really interesting. To me, what it could end up boiling down to is, are the bodies that they're going to throw at Kevin Durant enough? Like, they're not, again, there's no such thing as shutting down Kevin Durant. That does not exist, right? It's, can you stop him from averaging 35 in the series and maybe hold him to 26 in the series on under, you know, a certain shooting percentage mark? That's what it's going to come down to. I think the two things that we really need to look at, how much can the Rockets keep Clint Capella on the floor? The Warriors have, last series they saw, they started the death lineup. I do not respect the Hamptons 5 name. That is completely stupid. If they continue to play small, will Capella end up being able to do enough to stay on the floor? And if so, could he even end up then being a mismatch that's creating some serious positives for the Rockets? The other thing is the Curry injury. Nobody seems to really want to talk about it. And they're probably expecting Curry to handle CP3 like he has in the past with ease, but I'm not expecting that. One, I do not think that Curry is 100% because he just didn't look as sharp as Steph Curry has looked when he is 100% in that Pelican series. And Chris Paul has been terrific. He's been really good in two of the three matchups from the regular season against the Warriors, and Chris Paul was amazing in that game five against Utah, the closeout, right? Because people are still trying to push this horrible narrative that Chris Paul's not good in the playoffs. 40 points, 10 assists, no turnovers. He was absolutely brilliant. And another thing as well, it's easier for Steph to control that series.
That was awesome to watch.
Oh, it was amazing. It's easier for Steph to control the matchup of versus CP3 when he's not tasked with guarding him. Right, because back with the Clippers, Clay can handle that task, and Steph can then be hidden a little bit more. And Curry's probably a better defender than what the majority thinks, but he's still not an elite defender by any stretch of the imagination. So if a 75 or an 80% Steph Curry is matched up with Chris Paul, I think the Rockets then certainly can win that matchup. And then it comes down to what they're able to do with Clint Capella and the variance of both teams being high-volume three-point teams.
So, yeah, and clearly that's the Rockets' MO. That's what they're gonna do, as many shots as possible, as many open looks as possible, especially for Harden, who creates his own shot as well as anybody in the entire league. So the Rockets are plus 170 right now, Warriors minus 195. That's the odds I'm seeing right now. So prohibitive favorite there.
Yeah.
It's far greater on the Eastern Conference side, where the Cavs are minus 290. It's, you heard maybe a commercial before the break with Gabe and Cam Stewart talking about about the odds on the Celts, because the Celts are plus 245 from a gambler's standpoint. Like, you're not, are you really going to put that much money down on the Cavs? If you're just playing a little bit, you're going to put the money on the big odds, which is the Celts to win that series. But again, Rockets plus 170. So prohibitive underdog, even though they're favored in game one. So who do you like between the Warriors and the Rockets, and how many games?
I have been so back and forth on this, and I am someone who hates that Kevin Durant went to Golden State, and I'll probably never get over it, because I just think it's one of the worst things that's happened. So sometimes I worry that perhaps I'm looking through things like through the incorrect prism, where I'm hoping for something. I think that this series is going to go seven. To be completely honest with you, even right now, I'm still not sure which way I lean on picking a team. The one thing that I do somewhat keep coming back to is the idea of, what could I trust in a game seven? Like, what could I lean on to be consistent? And I feel like the answer is probably going to be Kevin Durant, because at the end of the day, there are few scorers that have been more automatic than KD.
Yeah, I'm with you. I feel like saying Warriors sweep just to make you laugh.
Don't do that to me.
I'm gonna go Warriors in six. I do think the Rockets can score enough points.
Did I just pick the Warriors? I don't know about that. I don't feel good about that.
I'm going to Warriors in six. So we'll come back, talk a little bit more about this, wrap up the show. It's Mike and Kevin on FST. We'll be right back.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back on FST, closing out the show. A little bit later today is going to be In This League with Bogman and the Welsh. Weekend Fantasy Update. I believe that's Joe Galina and George Kurtz. I want to take a moment, Kev, before we get back into this, and just say that my longtime friend and co-host Tony Sincotta, who's been on this network regularly, is moving on for other opportunities. And I'd like to thank him, because I wouldn't be in this position without him. He's a mentor, a friend, and a former co-host, and somebody that I have great respect for. So I wanted to make sure that people knew that he's moving on to other opportunities. I'm sure you'll hear from him again. I'm sure he and I will do shows again together down the road. But just wanted to say thank you to him. I owe him a ton, and I'll miss him on this network. So to those of you that have heard his content, he's funny, he's knowledgeable, and is somebody that I really will miss greatly. So that being said, I just wanted to get that off my chest and get back into the NBA. So you're wishy-washy with your pick. I just came right out and said it, Warriors in six. You were like, I don't know, am I really going to do this? So what is it? Give me the pick. I'm nailing you down now. This series starts in less than in about 48 hours.
I think I'm going to pick the Warriors in seven. I think at some point I'll just have to accept it.
That means you really don't know. When you say seven, you don't really know.
I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I don't know. Like, there are a lot of variables that play into this series. I think, honestly,
here's what I'll say. I heard Jeff Van Gundy make a pick the other day, and he's picking Houston because he thinks they're hungry.
That's stupid.
And they have a lot of hunger, which the Warriors don't have. But I have to say, and I'm not borrowing this from Dan Le Batard because I heard it on his show on ESPN, I don't know. That doesn't do anything for me to explain why they win the series, because they're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
The Warriors are hungry too. Draymond Green doesn't play like he's not hungry for another championship. So they didn't have the most wins, and they didn't go for the record 73. The last time that happened, it didn't work out well for them. I think when it gets to the playoffs, they can turn it on. They have a brilliant coach. They have brilliant players. And yes, Steph Curry's injury can play a role in a couple of games, conceivably. But you mentioned the thing right before break that I think supersedes some of that stuff, that they still have KD. It doesn't matter that Steph isn't the star of the show, because the other star of the show for them is an MVP and a finals MVP.
This is kind of the thing, right? Like, so why I think that's made is because here's what I feel like: the Warriors rest on their laurels of accomplishments that they've yet to accomplish more than any team I've ever seen. But the reason that they do that is because then they typically end up accomplishing those things. When it comes to their hunger, look, for Golden State to validate what they've done, right, to validate the fact that yesterday there's a report that Klay Thompson is going to take about a $50 million pay cut to stay in Golden State. The fact that Kevin Durant's taking significantly less money while Steph Curry took the biggest contract that
anyone
ever saw.
Klay's crazy if he takes $50 million less. KD could take less because he's got a $200 million shoe deal.
Well, Klay, I think, has a Chinese shoe deal. So normally how those work, it's like significant money, but there, and the sneakers are big over there while they're not big here. But here's my overall point with that, right? In order to validate,
let me back that up. Kevin Durant, a 10-year endorsement contract with Nike that could be worth up to $300 million.
Jeez.
His first one was a $60 million deal over 7 years. So there you go.
The thing is, for the Warriors to validate what they've done in terms of the decisions that they are making, they need to. So the way we have the LeBron Jordan debate, right? Like, it started out where people didn't like it, and now people are like, okay, I'm okay with you make that, right? And we're perhaps going to get to a point where people are then more so on the side of the LeBron stuff. Like, I mean, Jordan is involved in this as well. We're talking about the greatest team of all time. Like, the Warriors need to be at a point where the majority thinks that they're the greatest team of all time to validate what they've done here. They won 73-9, the greatest single season record ever. They blew a 3-1 lead after coming back from a 3-1 lead to Kevin Durant's team, and then Kevin Durant went to that team. To validate that decision, like, honestly, part of the thing is with people picking them in 4 or 5, like, that's what they should do. That's what they should do. But the Rockets are still really, really good. And the Cavs have LeBron. Like, there's going to be obstacles for them to overcome, right? But there's no excuse for them to lose this series. Like, there are people who have already said there's no shame in losing to the Warriors. And that's 100% correct. But there's shame every time this team loses a game, let alone loses a series.
Yeah, people were like stunned that the Pelicans took a game from them. You know, they won it sort of convincingly, but it didn't really faze them. I think, you know, the good teams, the really good teams, the great teams, the thing they do best is come back from adversity. Whether they're down in a series like they did, as you just mentioned, against Oklahoma City, or in a particular game, or after they get blown out by the Pelicans, they just shrug it off and say, you know what? Like, our goal isn't to sweep everybody. We're trying to win every game to go out there, but it's unrealistic. And Steve Kerr, I think, is, you know, he's the one managing it in that way. And that's, I think that's what's brilliant about it. Yeah, he's a bunch of great players, but I think he understands. You don't see a lot of panic in his voice. Yet, at the same time, somebody asked him about the hunger comment and the Rockets hungrier, and he's like, I feel good about where we're at because my guys have rings.
Mm.
He's being very arrogant about it, but in a good way, and I think I can appreciate that. And I think Kerr knows you can't panic when you're down, when you're up 2-1 like they were in that Pelican series. They won the first two. They lost game three. Who's panicking?
Right.
Like, we're just trying to get to 4. We'd like to do it as efficiently as possible, but like, what? How many records are we trying to set here that, oh, we got to sweep through the playoffs now in order for people to give us respect? It's absurd.
Right.
if we end up winning the championship and lost four or five games along the way, who cares? We have a ring. Like, nobody cares that we would blow through the playoffs. I remember the Michael Jordan year when they were rolling through and they ended up against the Sonics in the finals. They went up 3-0 on that Sean Kemp, Gary Payton team, and then they lost the next two because they weren't motivated. They just didn't close out. And, you know, Kemp and Payton and that team were good, but do you think they care that, I think, what year was that? That might have been the 96. What, do you think they cared that they didn't sweep the Sonics? Who cares? Like, they blew them out in three games, and then they took their foot off the gas, and Jordan was probably playing cards till hours of the night, and then they ended up closing it out in six instead of four. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day, and I think they don't panic when it comes to stuff like this. I'm not suggesting they don't have their hands full. A six-game series can be wildly competitive and hard-fought, and if it went to seven, it clearly wouldn't surprise me. But I think at the end of the day, they are going to have a tough time when it comes to KD, as everybody should. And I'm not saying that Warriors won't have a tougher time with Harden and CP3. It's a good combo, and people will point to the regular season games this year, but those don't mean that much to me, especially when the Warriors know what they're playing for and they know how to play for it.
No, I think that's in terms of the regular season stuff, that totally matters. I just think that if, say, Golden State went out there, right, and they were like, oh, this is the team that everyone said that's going to beat us, all right, we'll handle this. They didn't do that, right? So I think it's relevant in the fact that means at least there's that it doesn't completely dismiss the Rockets. I'll say this much, though, right? And I don't know how you view last year's finals, but I think I view it differently than probably almost every person in the world, maybe because I'm overly invested. I can't stop thinking of the what-ifs. What if Kyle Korver made that corner three in Game 3 and they didn't blow that gigantic lead? Because they played two games in Cleveland, and the Cavs were up gigantic in one, and they didn't close it out, and that cost them. And then they smoked them in Game 4. Now, if they weren't able to hold on to that, and it was 2-2, now Game 5, who knows, they get probably blown out again, but they'd have been the favorites to win Game 6. And once we get into a Game 7, anything could happen. Like, absolutely anything could happen, because it's the most tense game of your life. It is the most tense moments of your absolute athletic career. And there's a lot of different variables that then come into place in a one-game elimination scenario. And I just wonder if we're at a spot where, you know, against the really elite situations, is Golden State always as dominant as we feel that they are? Because if that series went seven last year, if the Cavs just held serve at home, and then they went to Golden State for seven, I tell you, a lot of people would have thought that LeBron would have been able to pull it out. And
yeah, I get that in like a winner take all kind of game, you want to bet on the guy that you think is the best player. But you know, there's a lot of what ifs there. I get what you're saying. So look, we're gonna have a lot of fun talking about the NBA here for the next couple of weeks, at least. I mean, it's technically not mid-May yet, so we got a few more weeks to talk about this. So you're going Warriors in seven.
Yeah.
I got Warriors in six. You have Cavs in four.
Yes.
And I have the Celts in six. I'm kind of...
Cavs in six, you said, right?
Edge. What did I say? Yeah, definitely not Celts. I meant Cavs in six, because they've been so good at home. I just think the Cavs are due for a dud or two, especially after they came off a sweep. I might change it to five. Yeah, I'll say five now. I'm going to hedge and go back to five.
I think the logical pick is five.
I could waver back and forth.
I just don't see Boston. I just think that the Cavs are going to stress the rest.
Yeah. So I meant to bring Rob in earlier in the show because Rob Bowe is a new producer on the show. So, Rob, how are you doing, bud?
Good. I'm great.
Job.
What's going on, guys?
Show. Couple of technical issues on my end, but you've solved them brilliantly. Super professional, and I appreciate it. So
that's all I try to.
You're a Mets fan. Yeah, that's right. We know you're a Mets fan. So what are the other sports that I can lean on you for commentary?
I mean, I'm a Jet fan. I don't necessarily watch football. I watch the Jets, if you want to call them a football team. but yeah, other than the Jets, I don't pay attention to football.
So you're a native New Yorker. used to work at the big bad evil enterprise where I, I'm kidding, where I used to work. Serious. Used to work there, and now you are gainfully employed at the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. So we're happy to have you. Where did you go to school?
I went to Iona College in New
Rochelle. Iona College. Man, we are teaming with Iona grads.
Pumping them out.
At the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. That's good.
What like a farm system.
I graduate Saturday.
Yeah, it is. You graduate this Saturday. Look at you.
This upcoming
already
Saturday.
Wait, today? Or
no,
next
no, no,
Saturday?
No, 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 no. This upcoming Saturday. So next
well,
Saturday.
Well, it is Saturday, so you're confusing me. It is
well,
Saturday.
This upcoming so. Saturday. Would
He's
be
down there in a gown,
the next
Mike.
Next Saturday.
Yeah, next
you
Saturday.
You say next Saturday.
All right.
Okay. That's the generally in English. That's the way we would phrase it.
I'm not
say
an English
next
major.
Saturday. Understandable. Communications guys. You can't have it all together.
No.
Okay. Well, good. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in Queens.
Queens?
In Queens, as did I. So proud Queens native. What town in Queens did you grow up?
Belrose. Do you know that town?
Belrose.
A lot of people don't know it.
Well, oh, I grew up in Queens, so I'm familiar with it. I went to a very large high school, and people from all over Queens went there, so I sort of knew every town based on the people I went to high school with. Well, that's good stuff. I went to St. Francis Prep High School.
Oh. You went to Prep? You went to Cross.
Who went to Cross?
Well, yeah, me and Rob went to the same high school and college. We both went to Holy Cross.
Oh, you did? I didn't realize that. So
yeah. Right. I didn't know you were a Prep guy.
So
I hate
I
you
am.
Now.
Yeah,
yeah. Now I don't
clearly.
Like you as much.
I know, but
got his mic, Rob.
I know, but that's why I'm the host.
Oh,
I'm the host.
Wow.
So that's how it happens. I'm the host, co-host, producer. It's all one big happy family. Catholic school kids creating rivalries and getting along. So, yes, that is where I went to high school. So, well, good stuff. I'm
You're
happy to have you on board.
Wow.
We'll learn more about you in future shows. Anything interesting about your athletic life or anything else that you care to share with the entire audience?
Not off the top of my head.
He's an athletic specimen. Don't hide it, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, I am. I'm kind of like a freak.
Yeah, you are. Sort of like a Saquon Barkley type.
He's just like
Something
Saquon.
Like that.
They just didn't give him the chance.
But yeah. For every sport.
Oh, I get it.
Every
well,
sport.
Right. That's good to know. That's good to know. All right. Yeah, I'm trying to create a freak of my own in my 5-year-old son. He's got soccer in about a half an hour, so we'll see if he can, you know, live up to those lofty expectations. I haven't playing sports 6 days a week, which I said in the past is just bad parenting. I didn't mean to do that, and it's a little too much for him. So we gave him a day off from baseball the other day. It's getting a little too intense.
It's
he
an
likes
athlete.
It, but. At the end of the day, he's 5, and I don't need him. He's not earning scholarships or anything like that. So, anyway, well, good, Rob. Glad to have you. I guess we'll miss you next Saturday since you'll be graduating and all
prior
that good stuff. So, right. So, congratulations on that, and I look forward to making fun of your high school in future weeks.
Thank
so,
you.
I can't believe you're a
stuff.
Terrier, Mike. I found out way more about you than Rob in this moment.
Yeah, so I am. It's where I went to high school.
I got to talk to Cardano. I can't do this show anymore. This is unacceptable.
Town called Whitestone? Well, please.
You're from Whitestone?
I am. I grew up. That's where
How do we never talk about this?
I don't know. It's not something that's particularly interesting for on-air consumption, I don't think.
I think people
are producer.
Completely entrapped by
riveted?
This right now. Yes, riveted is the word.
All right.
I
think
we'll
do a segment on it in later years. I'll tell you about
the geography
the
of
the
Queens
days of
in
growing
our background.
Up in the 70s and 80s in Queens, New York. There's been a lot of articles, I feel like, lately on a lot of like photo essays recently done by the New York Times did one this past week about what it was like growing up in the 70s and how brutal the park systems were and how unsafe it was. And it brought back a lot of memories. And like New York was a rough place to grow up back then. You guys are a lot younger than me, so you don't have that sense, but it was a much rougher place to grow up in the 70s and 80s. Kind of funny. Anyway, so that's what we got on the docket. We got NBA playoffs coming up. NFL, we're heading towards a little bit of a lull, but we're going to keep the NFL content coming, start looking at rankings, diving deeper into them as we start to gain a clearer picture of what teams may look like. It'll take a few weeks after OTAs to see if anything pops out, but we're going to get a better sense of where the rookies fit in,
hey, Mike,
people coming back from injuries and all that stuff.
Mike, do we share the news or is that hush-hush for now?
What news is that?
The news. You know the news.
I don't know the news.
The news about the program.
Oh, yes. We will be doing Sundays moving forward. Starting next week, it's myself and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Today, not just Saturday, but Sundays.
So
thank you for listening this Saturday. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great weekend. Happy Mother's Day, everybody.
Happy Mother's Day, Mom.